listening to The Meanderings of a Librarian. This episode is called Gratitude, simply that. And it's inspired by the fact that my school received two new students this week, and I'm not going to say much about them because who knows who listens to these podcasts. But I am going to say that I feel very grateful that one of these students I'm blessed to have in my advisory group. My advisory is made up of, or did have, 7 students. We now have 8, and they're an incredible group of girls who are so kind, and they laugh, and they support one another no matter what. It's really amazing, and I'm just the guide on the side, and it's my privilege to spend time with them every week. So we are so excited to have a new advisee sister. And this podcast for sure is inspired by what has happened this week. So I started off the week feeling very just a little bit depressed, and I don't know why, and that doesn't happen to me often, but it happens to all of us, and there's really no reason that I could pinpoint, but just feeling right down in the dumps. Maybe it was the time change, who knows, it doesn't matter. I get a little bit upset with myself because I do think about all that I have and appreciate that and think I have no reason to feel depressed, but I did, and I guess it's important for all of us to acknowledge our emotional feelings. So there it is. And then I walked into school that day, and in the spot, well, on my circulation desk, there was this white box, and it said, "Val, you know, happy Monday." And I kind of couldn't believe it because I really felt so down in the dumps, and here was this gift from someone. There is this mystery giver who I truly appreciate. This person gives random gifts to those of us that work at Rumsey Hall. I think I know who it is. And I really, really appreciate it because all of us, like, and inside there were some chocolates and some lovely novelties, play on the word novelty. And I appreciate receiving that gift, and it made me smile and kind of got me out of my funk, or helped to get me out of my funk. But back to gratitude. So this morning I was listening to NPR, and I heard this story about a new book called Designed to Live, which details refugees' ingenuity in creating life in camps. And I'll put all the details in the description of this podcast, so if you're interested, you can listen to it. It's just a 7-minute listen. And it completely connected with these new students that we received at Rumsey this week. Really fascinating how people in refugee camps, and so this is actually a book called Designed to Live, Everyday Inventions from a Refugee Camp, and it just came out October 19th of this year, and it has two editors, Azra Aksamyeja, who was interviewed in this NPR session this morning. And I'll read a little bit from the description here. "The power of design to create a life worth living, even in a refugee camp. Designs, inventions, and artworks from the Azraq refugee camp in Jordan." This book shows how, even in the most difficult conditions, forced displacement, trauma, and struggle, design can help create a life worth living. Designed to Live documents designs, inventions, and artworks created by Syrian refugees living in the Azraq refugee camp in Jordan. Through these ingenious and creative innovations, including the vertical garden, an arrangement necessitated by regulations that forbid planting in the ground, a front hall fashioned to protect privacy, a baby swing made from recycled desks, and a chess set carved from a broomstick, refugees defy the material scarcity, unforgiving desert climate, and cultural isolation of the camp. So, a little description about this book. I am grateful that I have the gift of books. I for sure will order this book either for my personal library or for the Rumsey Library, because I think we can all learn quite a bit from it. Here you have these people that are living out in the desert where the temperature gets up to, you know, 118 degrees Fahrenheit, maybe higher. And there's no trees. So in the middle of nowhere, small cramped rooms, many people, and yet they have the power to live on. And I think that speaks to the incredible power that we as human beings have to live and to continue on, the resilience, the perseverance, the hope that we have, despite some pretty miserable conditions that life sometimes throws at us, certainly at some people more than others. And I listened especially to the part about vertical gardens. So in these refugee camps, the people are not allowed to plant gardens because they're, you know, you can't plant in the ground. So you have to be very innovative. And so through recycled containers, right, plastic containers, they're growing gardens in this way. And the seeds that they might have brought with them when they had to rush out of wherever they're coming from, right? But seeds that we can get to grow into plants give us a connection to our homes, no matter where we are forced to go in the world. Huge connection to seeds this week. In our fourth and fifth grade classes at Rumsey, we're finishing up Global Read Aloud, The Jumbies by Tracy Baptiste. And I have the pleasure of looking at students' sketchnote mini books. I'm a big proponent of having students sketchnote, which is not doodling. It's actually drawing quick little sketches to activate the creative part of our brains, but then connect that with words to really capture what's happening in a lecture or in a book or whatever. It's a really powerful, there's a lot of research behind sketchnoting that shows how effective it is to help people learn and retain information. But I'm looking at this one student's sketch notebook, and here at the end, it's chapter 43, and the chapter is called Grow. Seeds are really important in this chapter. And this student wrote, "A seed is a promise." And this is a student who doesn't always put in the best effort. I've seen huge improvements from his work last year. He was new to our school last year, and it's so fun to see students improving and buying into their learning more. And so I love the fact that this student included that quote, "A seed is a promise." And this brings me back to a book that I've mentioned, The Seed Keeper by Diane Wilson. My friend Debbie was reading it at the time, and she returned it because she finished reading it. And so I said, ooh, I've got to go back to that book and look at some of the passages that I had marked. And so I'm going to share some of those with you right now. This is from page 303. Family gave me a place. History, connection, identity, even in the midst of terrible pain and heartbreak, family held the possibility of love. And as I look at our two new students at Rumsey, I can see the pain in their eyes, in their voices. I could also see the hope, the joy, the love. I've watched them as they connected with their families very far away. And I don't know how we can replace those family connections, but I know that we at Rumsey will do our very best to become a second family or a third family for these new students, because family is oh so important. I'm going to try to hold this all together as I go through this podcast. My apologies for losing it a little bit, but I'll do my very best. I think that all of you out there know that I'm passionate about what I do and the connections I make with other human beings. So, and I always think back to when I was living in other parts of the country or the world and the people that reached out to me and gave me a sense of love and connection. And so try to pay that forward, right? And give that back to others. So here's another short quote on page 311 of Diane Wilson's book. And this is Darlene, who's speaking here, one of the characters. And she continues with a weak smile. That's why I plant. That's why I had to plant this corn. That's how I found you. Plants have their own way of talking. It's not the same here as in the garden, but it was something I could do. I could ask the plants for their help. I could ask the crow for his help. I could talk to the oak trees on the boulevard outside my apartment and ask them to watch for you. And at this point in the book, Darlene is living in an apartment. And if I'm remembering correctly, she has like corn stalks growing in her apartment and other vegetables and things, because she needed that connection to the plants because it connects her to her family. And on page 335, here is, they're talking about a person who didn't really have a connection to the seeds. And he, this is the quote, he had never been taught to think about his seeds as relatives, as living beings deserving of loving care. While not intending harm, he had been raised to believe that it was man's God-given right to, quote, fill the earth and subdue it, to rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky. That's the end of that quote. And the last, and so this is an example of a person who was planting crops with seeds specially manufactured by a company in particular that really negatively affects the land and the surrounding waters. And, you know, Diane Wilson is someone who advocates, you know, really having a connection to the actual seeds and the earth that is genuine. And so the last part that I will read, this is from the author's note, and it starts on page 364. In the face of such overwhelming loss, what can we as individuals even do? The answer is as close as the nearest garden. We keep our seeds safe by growing them, cooking with them, and sharing them with friends, family, and community. When we reestablish a relationship based in reciprocity, when we nurture the soil and protect the water that in turn grows healthy seeds, we are reclaiming an indigenous connection to the earth. These seeds carry our stories. They are witnesses to their own long history on this land. Seeds and our indigenous foods are central to our cultures, reminding us of our ancient relationship with the natural world around us. Mitakuye, Owasin, we are all related. So that's the last bit from The Seed Keeper that I'll share with you from Diane Wilson. Ties in so beautifully with this book that I'm going to read soon called Designed to Live. Seeds are so powerful. Also connects to the Jumbies and the main character, Corinne, who has this incredible gift to plant seeds and grow miraculous, magnificent oranges that are sweeter than anyone else's and have extra power to them as well. So I am grateful that I have the power to plant some vegetables here and there. I'm grateful to my parents for teaching me how to do that. My parents have a much bigger garden, and they share the fruits and vegetables of their garden with so many. And I also wanted to, you know, speak to this idea of family and connectedness. And this comes from ADHD 2.0, New Science and Essential Strategies for Thriving with Distraction from Childhood Through Adulthood, by Edward M. Halloway, MD, and John J. Ratty, MD. And this is the newest version of their original book called Driven to Distraction about ADHD. And one of the chapters is called The Healing Power of Connection. And there's a subsection here about feeling understood. And though this book is certainly about ADHD, even those of us that don't have ADHD, there are a lot of important lessons for us, and a lot of important words that they and knowledge that they share with us. So in this section called Feeling Understood on page 56, it begins, creating comfortable, positively connected environments is the most important step in helping people of all ages get the most out of life in general. The lack of connection particularly hurts people who have ADHD, but a lack of connection for anyone is harmful. So creating those comfortable, positively connected environments is so essential for our new students who have spent some time in an African country before coming to the United States, need to feel that connected environment, even though they're very, very far from home and their families. I'm going to read a little bit below, also on page 56. So there's in a book called The Globalization of Addiction, Bruce Alexander uses the term dislocation, which was coined by the political economist Karl Polanyi to refer to the loss of, quote, psychosocial integration. Dislocation, he explains, is psychologically toxic and untenable. An individual will crack in any number of ways: disruptive behavior, extreme anxiety, withdrawal, school refusal, the beginnings of substance abuse, depression, and thoughts of suicide, the development of an eating disorder, cutting, poor performance at work, loss of job, marital difficulties, the dismal list goes on. While Alexander's focus is on addiction of all kinds, including addiction to screens, his words perfectly describe how many children with ADHD feel in classrooms and adults with ADHD feel in the adult world: misunderstood, alienated, left out, on the outside looking in. Sometimes literally on the outside. Dave Pilkey, the writer and illustrator who created the beloved Captain Underpants series of books and many other children's books, spent most of his elementary school years sitting alone outside in the hallway after being paddled with a board by the principal. How terrible it is that millions of children with ADHD suffer similarly from the lack of sustaining connection simply because they are different, because their minds run like race cars with bad brakes, and because others fail to understand. Those of us with ADHD are usually pretty sensitive, so we begin to put up defenses. And before you know it, we're loners, being teased, put off, or if we're adults, not climbing the ladder, when people are wondering why, and not in a helpful way. The experience of living with this condition is like being part of an invisible minority. Even if you do become visible, even if you do get identified and treated, you usually still face prejudice. Oh, he's a special ed kid, and goes on and on. He's got ADHD, whatever that is. He takes Adderall. The stigma rules. So though this book is obviously focused on ADHD and helping those who live with ADHD and helping those who either teach or live with people with ADHD, help us learn how to live with them better and provide positive learning environments or living environments for them, what these authors have to say connects to other parts of life as well. And so creating a positive connection for these two new girls who are at Rumsey, I'm looking to all of these books. I feel so grateful that I have books to turn to when I need to figure something out. So in this time of gratitude and thankfulness, looking at Thanksgiving and how it's been celebrated and that'll probably be a whole other new podcast, re-looking at the truth of Thanksgiving and how it was first celebrated. That's been in my realm of learning lately with my librarian colleagues. In any case, I'm going to bring this podcast about gratitude to an end, encourage you to think about all that you have to be grateful for. Appreciate the gratitude in your life. Reach out to others who are in need in whatever way. And thank you all for listening.